The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this morning, I would like to read the first two verses from the Dhammapada and then discuss them a little bit. And in these ancient anthologies of teachings, that early Buddhist teachings, sometimes the first teaching in the collection is particularly important as kind of the entryway into the rest of it, or as the foundational kind of perspective that everything else follows. And so here is the first two verses. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows, as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of an ox. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never-departing shadow. So it gives priority to the mind. In the ancient world, the word here is citta, which some people prefer to translate as heart, but it focuses on our inner life, wherever we feel it resides. And the quality of that inner life, the landscape of our inner life, the attitudes that we carry with us, have an impact. And here it puts it so important that our experience of the world is very much shaped, or here it says it's made by the mind itself. And the word experience is a very important word to kind of understand. It's the way that we register, the way that we interpret, the way that we don't experience things innocently, as if we're just a passive recipient of the way things are. And that a big part of how we interpret the world or relate to the world or has a lot to do with what our mind does, the attitudes we have, the interpretations we have, the beliefs we have, the motivations we have. And so in Buddhism, there's a priority given to understanding what our contribution is. What are we doing? What are we doing to contribute to our experience that we're having in any given moment? And so the idea of taking responsibility for oneself is a hugely important part of Buddhist practice. And then it goes on to say that speak or act with a corrupted mind, suffering follows. So certain attitudes, certain motivations that we live with, we don't get off, it's not like a free pass. That there are consequences to how we live our lives and the choices we make. So if we, it's a very evocative word, that we're corrupted mind. Some people maybe prefer other words. I think it's a kind of umbrella term for, any kind of movement of the mind where there's harm being caused, harm to ourselves, harm to others. And so if you intend to cause harm, or even unintentionally, if the mind is somehow grappling with movements like anger and resistance and self-righteousness or fear or something that cause harm, that would be called a kind of, in this kind of language, corrupted mind. And if we act on that unskillfully, then brings along suffering. But if we act from a peaceful mind, and this, the word peaceful mind here is also kind of an umbrella term for all kinds of ways of living in the world that doesn't cause harm, but living in the world that brings benefit, brings well-being. But a peaceful mind is kind of a light mind, a mind that's not heavy or forceful or aggressive. Then happiness follows. And the similes that are used for each of these are telling. For us, speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of an ox. An ox pulling a wagon, you know, heavily, you know, wagon is way down, and it's an image of a lot of work. It's being kind of shackled, you know, being yoked to this heavy, heavy burden you're carrying along with you. And this poor ox is sweating and working hard to get the wagon to go. So there's kind of a feeling of being weighed down. And that, you know, and you kind of, you know, it's a hard trek to make. The image that goes along with speak or act with a peaceful mind and happiness follows, like a never departing shadow. And a shadow has no weight. And a shadow provides no resistance, no obstacles for the person who's walking along. Your shadow is not going to cause you any problems, as far as I know. You can go over for a long trip and, you know, a long walk, and your shadow is like, you know, most people don't even think about their shadow. It has no weight. There's no, you know, it's light and causes no obstacles, and it just, you know, it doesn't interfere with our path as we walk. So I think it's these two images give very different feeling of the effect on us. And so the idea that speak and act with a peaceful mind, then happiness that we get has a light feeling to it. It doesn't, it's not an obstacle, it's kind of relaxed, it's kind of hangs on to us the way the shadow hangs on to us. We're not clinging to it. But if we suffer, suffering, there's something about the nature of what Buddhism calls dukkha or suffering that tends to be sticky. That tends to kind of cling to us, or we cling to it, or creates a burden, a heaviness, slows us down, makes life less free to walk through it. And the difference between living a life of freedom and living a life of bondage is the difference of kind of, here the image would be difference between living a life that you know, is something that's as light as a shadow versus something as heavy as a big wagon that, you know, you have to be an ox to pull. So all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. So what is your mind like? Or what is your attitude like? What attitudes do you bring with you as you go into the world? Are they attitudes, are they qualities of mind, are they motivations of mind that feels like support you, that help free you, that brings happiness? Or are they attitudes or motivations or thoughts or beliefs that tend to weigh you down, that tend to be great obstacles for you as you find your way through the world? So to have this inner reflection, you know, to understand ourselves through these guidelines, through these perspectives, so not just to be present for our life as it is, but to be able to be present so that we can see the differences or the consequences of our inner landscape, what we do in here. And then not just be a victim of what the mind dreams up, but to be able to have some ability to work through that and find a way to live and act from a peaceful mind or from a free mind, as opposed to one that's, in this language, corrupted mind, or a mind that's caught in bondage, that's not free. I think this is kind of one of the core aspects of or core opportunities that the practice of mindfulness can offer us. So that's what was on my mind this morning. And do you have any questions about that or comments that you'd like to make?
Thank you, Gil. I think it's a really important point that I remember some years ago hearing a lot about just noticing. And there's a lot of value in that. But if I'm noticing for an hour how crazy my mind is, I might want to do an intervention, which is, you know, how can I bring some more calm and peace to my mind, whether it's saying some metta phrases and whatnot. And it took me a while to hear that, oh, sometimes you just don't let the mind be in its corrupted state. It's skillful to do some intervention. So I'm really glad you brought that up. It's maybe not often talked about, or if it's talked about, at least I know when I was new, I didn't hear that part. I heard a lot about noticing and being aware. Right. And
great, thank you.
So, as I become more and more mindful, I notice that there are triggers that in the external world that will elicit a certain kind of emotion that is pre-verbal, goes back a very long way, and it doesn't feel like it's mind to me. It's not a thought. Certainly there could be thoughts that arise afterwards.
Right.
But to me it's felt more like there is something else that precedes thought.
So now that you know that part of you, that knowledge and that awareness that's operating, how does that change things for you?
Now that I'm aware that that's...
Yeah, that happens, that dynamic happens.
I guess I'm more and more meet that with compassion, realizing that I'm not. It's not volitional. It's not intentional. And so, what I choose to do, how I choose to react or respond to that, and what thoughts arise as a result of that, are definitely within my ability to make a choice about.
Great. So that's acting and speaking with a peaceful mind. In relationship to it, because to do the opposite, to act and speak to it with a corrupted mind, what would that look like for you?
I would just feed into, you know, just whatever, usually fear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I think so. The reason I answered the question that way is that we can only be responsible for what we can do, and so our. If we see a place to shift how we respond, and respond in a more useful, productive way, valuable way, then that's where the Dharma, the practice, is found. That's where we have no that which arises. We have no choice over, and we can't. You know, just happens by itself. And then, you know, that's the way it's working for the time being, and then our job is to. When we see that, is to figure out how to be most responsible to it as we can. How do we respond? Over time, I think what happens is that, hopefully what happens, as the mind kind of works through the layers and layers in the mind, we start seeing more and more places of choice, more and more places where we can make a difference, we can respond in different ways. And things which initially can seem unconscious, or just it's not us doing it; it's just bubbling up from some deep place that is a mystery to us. After a while, maybe stops becoming mystery. Maybe not everything, but we start seeing more and more how the mind works, and we start opening up and having a wider range of choice. But if we don't see the choice, there is no choice. But mindfulness kind of creates more choice by showing us a wider range of what's going on.
It just seems like the term mind, I'm not quite sure that always fits. But anyway, never mind.
Great. Well, that's enough. Thank you both, for all of you. And I think that one of the implications, but one of the implicit ideas behind all this is how important your mind is. And by extension, you are, that you're important, you're valuable, it's worthwhile caring for yourself and caring for your mind. And And it's a wonderful tool we have that can serve us to bring out the best in us. So I hope that the best in you is something you can share with the world. So we're going to do our cleaning.